Hi, I'm Julia Haller. I'm the ophthalmologist in chief at Wills Eye Hospital, and I'm here today in a special collaboration between Medscape Ophthalmology and Wills Eye Hospital. With me are my colleagues, Dr. Carl Regilla, who's head of our retina service, and Dr. Alan Ho, who's director of retinal research. We're here to recap some of the highlights from the American Academy of Ophthalmology just a few weeks ago, and to look back on this year and then forward onto the horizon with a little bit of an update and retrospective on what's new in retina. Carl, what sticks in your mind as you look back over this last year, and particularly at some of the highlights of the Academy?
Well, Julia, there's actually been a lot of developments in our field once again. It's been a good, exciting year. DME is probably the big disease of the year, in that we have two new approved drugs, actually three new approved drugs. We have Eylea getting the FDA approval for DME. We have Ozurdex and Iluvien, two long-acting steroid devices. And these clinical trials have been taking place now for a few years, but it's all really come together with the FDA approval this year.
Very exciting. What about you, Alan? If you look back, what are you thinking?
It's very clear that diabetic macular edema, or DME, has been the showcase for new treatments in retina. We have now different classes of drugs, and this is a good idea because diabetic macular edema is a complex disease and doesn't always respond just to one class of drugs. So having shorter-term and longer-term steroid options, I think, are going to be good for our patients.
How about that press release at the Academy? It wasn't a podium presentation, but Regeneron put out the press release showing that in the Diabetic Retinopathy Clinical Research Network trial, head-to-head comparison of anti-VEGFs, aflibercept looked a little better. I mean, it's just a press release. What are your thoughts about that,
Yeah,
Alan?
it's just a press release, so we look forward to the full data set and manuscript. And I think it's a little, it's not up to date that we would get just a release of information from companies who are sponsoring this trial, but not get the full data set. And in part, that reflects, I think, some old rules, if you will,
Conservative.
conservative. And in the meanwhile, it leaves the doctors and the patients in a little bit of a lurch. We know the magnitude of the difference between the different treatments, and Protocol T compared Avastin as needed, Eylea as needed, and Lucentis as needed. So we need more information, I think.
Yeah, we came out of the Academy saying the biggest news at the Academy was actually not at the Academy officially because it never got to the podium. We would have liked to have seen it come to the podium with more details for us, the providers, and for our patients, so we have a better sense for whether there are really differences between these three anti-VEGF drugs for treating DME or not. And we need the details to know if there are significant differences or not. Instead, as you said, we have minimal information from a press release, but stay tuned because, well, I think maybe January, February 2015 is going to be the time frame to have some more details.
Little teaser.
Little teaser.
What else? Anything besides diabetes that sticks in your mind, Alan?
On the macular degeneration front, of course, we've made tremendous progress in wet AMD over the past 7 to 10 years, and in the dry AMD front, we are looking at a variety of different investigational trials for geographic atrophy. Maybe I'll let Carl speak to that, but I think one of the more interesting things is the whole notion of monitoring at home. We now have some information from one company, Notal Vision, from the 4C device, on patients being able to monitor their vision at home with a device like a pair of binoculars connected through the internet and wirelessly to monitor their vision. And that study showed that patients who converted from dry to wet did much better because they were detected earlier. I like this idea of continuous monitoring at home.
Yeah, early detection is key to get the best results in AMD. In fact, through this year, we've had several studies that show when you catch wet AMD, when the vision's still good, like 20/40 or better, the chances of keeping the vision 20/40 or better is really high, up over 70%. And that really just goes to show you, one, how good our drugs really work, and two, the power of early detection. And as Alan mentioned, That's really the biggest step forward in identifying these patients and getting them to have effective treatment early. For dry AMD, Alan's right, we are now in the midst of launching phase 3 for the drug lampalizumab for dry AMD. That may indeed be our first and only dry AMD treatment in the future. So it's going to be a big phase 3 definitive study that will tell us whether or not this drug does indeed slow the progression of dry AMD. So phase 2 showed some preliminary positive efficacy information, and now put it to the test in phase 3.
Carl, speaking of dry AMD, nice article, congratulations, in The Lancet. Do you want to comment on stem cell therapy briefly?
Yeah, I think Alan and I and many others in the United States and abroad have been working with a variety of stem cell protocols and programs for advanced dry AMD, and also with this particular project, it's also Stargardt's disease. Now, Stargardt's disease is not all that rare. It's estimated to be about 1 in 10,000, so it's the most common cause of juvenile advanced macular degeneration. So we were able to show that we could safely administer stem cell-derived RPE cells. It's an RPE transplant, and deliver it safely, have some controlled growth, and some signal that something positive is happening in patients with advanced dry disease, dry AMD, and advanced dry Stargardt's. And this was recently published in Lancet, which is basically some long-term interim results from phase 1. And based on that, though, we're moving along quickly into phase 2. In fact, just yesterday came away from an investigator meeting to launch phase 2 for the same stem cell line of RPE cells to be used in advanced Stargardt's and advanced dry AMD.
Exciting. Yeah. Alan, they're ringing the bell on Wall Street for Second Sight. Any thoughts? You've been very active both in the development and now implementation post-FDA approval.
Yes, for those patients with the most advanced vision loss due to retinal degeneration, severe retinitis pigmentosa, Second Sight's Argus 2 device, a hardware system that is comprised of a retinal chip implant with 60 pixels, if you will, or 60 microelectrodes, wirelessly associated with a video system camera and processor unit that powers these microelectrode arrays that are placed surgically on the macula of these patients. We've had some good success here, and I think it's the beginning of a whole new world of potential therapies for these patients with the most severe vision loss.
Any new high-tech stuff at the Academy? How about surgically? What are you thinking about OCT combined with your OR scopes? Is that getting traction?
Well, I'd say two things on the surgical front that excite me the most is, as you mentioned right there, intraoperative OCT coupled to the operating room microscope. And also related to that is interesting development in terms of monitor systems that we can actually see what's happening better in the OR. And I'm very excited about 27-gauge vitrectomy. That's officially launched as of the Academy. At least one company has a system, and so we're all going to start to be able to dabble in 27-gauge sort of ultra-small incision vitrectomy surgery. So that's been very successful. Going from traditional 20-gauge to 23, 25, and now 27 opens up other potential advantages of this type of surgery.
And interestingly, the 27-gauge instrument may be most suited for complex cases like proliferative diabetic retinopathy with traction retinal detachment, where the smaller-gauge probe and mouth cutter opening allow you to get into tissue planes with the cutter alone.
Yeah, it's a bit counterintuitive. We used to sort of approach the smaller instruments in the easier cases because of some flexibility issues that were first-generation instruments, but they've overcome a lot of those shortcomings of smaller, finer instruments. And now, with the way they function, it's really quite impressive. You do our hardest cases, and as you said, maybe it most advantageous to do the most challenging proliferative diabetic retinopathy traction detachment type cases.
getting rid of scissors. Remember the old big scissors? Used to be big. And now there we are.
They're not dead completely.
Not gone.
It's been over a year. So
I missed the MPC. Sorry.
I missed the MPC, but it's a nice substitute, that's for sure.
Click, stick. Great. Well, that's very exciting. Lots of what a great field. I mean, so many exciting things happening. Have we missed anything that anybody wanted to bring up?
No, I think it's just impressive that we're still making strides and further advances in both the surgical and the medical front.
Oh, and laser. Let's not forget laser. I mean, lots of interest in minimally damaging laser, some new protocols on the horizon to see if we can make it just as effective or more effective with less collateral damage. So that's on the horizon, too, to look at. Great. Well, for Wills Eye Hospital and my colleagues here and Medscape Ophthalmology, thanks to all of you for tuning in.